Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. I say this every time. I mean it every time. Today was freaking fun. I had so much fun sitting down with bourbon author. She's the right hand to Fred Minnick at Bourbon Plus magazine. I mean, Carla Carlton is one hell of a woman that has been making a name for bourbon for years. And Ed Bly. Ed Bly has been kind of not at the forefront necessarily, but one of the main tenants, the main pillars that have brought up bourbon barrel picks for the past 5 years. Ed Bly has been responsible for some of the most coveted, some of the most traded and costly bourbon barrel picks. He gained notoriety at Cork and Bottle, has had several articles written about him. He's a great guy, and he's recently lost quite a bit of weight. The man is on top of his game like he's never been before. I'm super happy to have him here. Ed Bly and Carla Carlton are both here. They flew in from Louisville to come to my event, the Houston Whiskey Social, which by the time you're listening to this will be a week after the event. So I hope it went well. I hope there were no issues. I hope no one was a jerk, and I hope the event was well loved and treated with kindness. If it wasn't, then I'll start my apologies now and just say I'm sorry. I try to make the event as fun as possible for everybody. I don't know what happened. Whatever. So, this episode, as always, is sponsored by Edrington, who is responsible for Macallan and Highland Park. And we drink our way through a few things today and have a quick conversation about how the bourbon world has evolved in such a magnificent way the past 5 years. We are also joined by Randy Svetlik, who is colloquially known as one of the Four Horsemen locally. We don't get into that, but he is a very famous palate and a good friend of Ed's and a good friend of mine. He works at NASA as well, so now that is the fourth NASA person on this show. Go figure, we're in Houston. And if you haven't listened to an episode of the show before, let me recommend last week's episode. Two weeks ago was the episode we did with TJ Miller, who's a comedian. It was a completely uncensored episode. They got really off the rails, and it was great. It was very well loved, and all the feedback I've received has been positive. Last week's episode was with Kathleen DiBenedetto, who's a Bourbon Hall of Famer, I think she's the fifth female in the Bourbon Hall of Fame. She's fantastic. So without further ado, you can follow the show at mywhiskeyneat.com or Twitter at mywhiskeyneat or Instagram at mywhiskeyneat. You'll ask, why mywhiskeyneat? It's because I like to drink my whiskey neat. Other than that, I think that covers all of our bases. So without further ado, Carla Carlton from Bourbon Plus Magazine and Ed Bly from Rising Tide Spirits and Randy Svetlik from NASA. Cheers. I'm super excited that you both are here. First, I saw you like actually talk and in person on Bourbon Pursuit, and of course you're a bit familiar with that podcast as well. I'm excited you guys are down, and I was starting to tell you before the show I'm a little nervous about you guys being here this weekend because Louisville just had I forget the name of the festival, but they had like Lenny Kravitz there, and like it's a full-blown concert thing. Texas, where I have a it's the biggest event in Texas, but that's not saying much compared to what you guys might be used to up in Kentucky. So I'm a little nervous to try to show off my little – it's like, hey, look at my Honda Civic. It's a 2018. Like it's a,
and so you're being modest because I already know.
I'm really not trying to be modest. You guys have some of the biggest events. You do multiple day events. We are trying to get to that point where – but it's a slow
– sure.
You have to do it slow because like – I remember the first year we did 230 people or 330 people. I always forget. But the second year we wanted to double in size and people were like, that's a horrible idea. Well, that's only 700 people. Mm-hmm. And we pulled it off, but people were like trying to warn me. It's too much, too fat. And it was a bit much, but it was fine. And whereas you get like in New Orleans, they've got they just did their bourbon festival and it's like 5 days and thousands of people. And So we're baby step. We're toddlers right now. And so I'm just I'm a little nervous getting in some of the guys who've been guys and girls who've been doing it for just, you know, you guys have been doing it big up there forever. So
look, it's the culture, but it's neat seeing the culture expand, especially down here. Sure. Houston's on fire with mm-hmm. bourbon. I mean, I've seen what you guys have been doing down here, and it's absolutely incredible.
Well, we've had quite a bit of help. I mean, Randy, who's off camera, I know you guys mm-hmm. can't see him. Randy has been part of a group here that is called the Gulf Coast Bourbon Maniacs. They've been doing it here for like 15 years, but they've kept it relatively small and kind of close knit and more conversational. And it just seems like in the past 5 years. It's been ridiculous what's happened in Houston. So I'm excited that you're both here, and part of the show is drinking, and you guys have already poured. So I'm going to jump in. What are you guys drinking?
We had 89 Wild Turkey that actually survived the hurricane.
Oh, here is this Randy's?
Yeah, that's yes. Randy's.
All right, I'm taking a pour. So Hurricane Harvey.
That was underwater for 3 days, still corked. Randy said, but I'm telling you, it tastes fantastic.
Yeah, it does taste great.
I didn't know your house caught damage.
It wasn't. It was mm-hmm. a friend's house.
Okay.
Did you loot it? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. He's like, I'll go in there and help you clean up the damage. Yeah, and he's just like, collecting bottles.
Walks out with a bottle.
It was a gift from him for appreciation for helping him out during mm-hmm. a hard time. And
it's amazing.
I didn't want to take it, but he insisted. So
that's awesome. Yeah, love this label, too.
Oof. Mm.
So good.
Yeah. Man, Clint, there's not much. Yes, absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers.
There's not
cheers.
Much like Old Turkey.
Yeah.
89 is a stellar year.
Mm-hmm. There's about a 5-year span. For those who can't hear, Randy said that 89 is a great year for turkey. Mm-hmm. We have Randy's pick here too, the Armagnac. Mm-hmm. Have you tasted it yet? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tasty.
Very good.
Very tasty. He did very well on that one.
So you guys are actually here for, if people hadn't already picked up on it, the Houston Whiskey Social, my festival that we have here every year. I'm super excited. Carla has been working with Fred for quite some time, building the brand that is Bourbon Plus.
Yep.
Ed has been working on building his own brand with Rising Tide Spirits, right? You, for those who aren't familiar, Ed kind of made a name for himself for barrel picks, right? I mean, you and Cork and Bottle have been doing, I think the last... Was it 100 and something picks you guys have done?
We did close to 250 was the number.
250 picks. And how? What's that time span?
4 years.
4 years, 250 barrel picks. Yes. We worked on 30. I often misspeak on this show. In fact, last week with TJ Miller, I had mentioned that Nika was owned by Beam, and I know better. I freaking know better. We were trying to remember some Japanese whiskey. And the guy I've worked with Nika for years locally, Andy Maurer, who's now in California, I know they're not with Beam, but it just wouldn't click in. So we were drinking Hibiki, which is owned right. by Beam. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I misspeak all the time. I said that in the past recently that we worked, HBS did 30 picks last year. It's not accurate. It's more 30 projects. So right. the beer projects included, we've been a part of 30 projects last right. year. So, and we're pretty – that's a bit –
That's huge.
Overextending mm-hmm. ourselves locally. Yeah. And you guys did 250 in 4 years.
It's a lot. But, you know, we also ran barrels through the store and that kind of stuff for other groups that we were involved in picks on. So it wasn't all just cork and bottle picks per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of them were just picks. You know, we ran a sure. ton of them through there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We built quite a following over the time.
There. A massive following.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, obviously, next steps are... A little bit bigger.
Yeah, so you left your job over at Cork and Bottle to mm-hmm. build your own brand, your own distillery is the goal.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, and with Rising Tide Spirits.
Correct.
And so we basically, my whole point is we're sitting at a table here of three people who have been building, well, I'm not saying that I'm in the same category as you guys, but we've all been building a culture around brown water for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were actually talking off camera before we started, and I think it's kind of the hobby that chose the career for all of us to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. I mean, it's amazing how, I mean, for a long time I've worked in private aviation, and it's getting to the point where I very soon may not have to. Not that I have to. I love the job, but it's one of those things. It's like you start a company or you start doing something, you don't realize where it's going to lead you. And then all of a sudden you're seeing yourself in the situation where you're like, oh, okay, well, I mean, like, I don't, did Fred always have the dream of starting Bourbon Plus, or was this something that he realized at one point, you know what, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, I think he always had the dream of having a magazine. I don't know that he necessarily thought it would be a bourbon magazine all along. You know, he didn't start out covering bourbon, but it's been a dream of his for the past several years, certainly. I started out working at a newspaper. And I worked at the Courier Journal in Louisville for almost 20 years. And now, in fact, my real job is as communications director at a private university in Louisville. But I kept writing about bourbon just to keep my hand in that kind of, you know, writing.
Sure.
And, you know, I started a blog about 10 years ago and thought, you know, is there going to be enough to write about? You know, and it's just crazy because then it just all exploded.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And so wrote a book a couple of years ago, and I blog as the Bourbon Babe, and it's been really cool. And so, you know, met Fred through the course of doing that kind of writing. And when he asked me to be managing editor of Bourbon Plus, I jumped at that chance because it's, you know, we're trying to tell in-depth the stories of the characters, the personalities in the bourbon world, the sure. science behind bourbon. There's a ton of science involved. You know, and really tell long form stories, which a lot of magazines aren't really doing these days. So it's been,
yeah, everyone's
a blast.
Looking for like 150 words,
right.
little excerpts and
factoids and, you know, listicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got some great writers from all over the country. We've got fantastic photographers.
Your photography game's on point.
Yeah.
I mean, Bourbon Plus is killing it. When you come out with an idea, like I'm going to start my own magazine, the aesthetic is almost the most important thing to begin with, right?
Right.
If you can get the aesthetic right, then obviously you want substance, which mm-hmm. you guys are providing. But if you only get the substance and it looks like a Mad magazine from 1990, you know, it's no one's going to want to read it or care.
Yeah. And we're really fortunate because Fred's been writing for this magazine called Covey Rise for over 10 years. And they're based out of Birmingham, and they're publishing Bourbon Plus as well. And that's a magazine for you know, bird hunters. And it's also a beautiful magazine. He has written a column about, you know, when you come back with your dead birds, what do you want to drink afterwards around the fire? So he's written this column, and that's how he got to know those folks. And they bring that same approach to Bourbon Plus of having, you know, beautiful photography, full page photography, a mix of 75% words to 25% ads, not breaking up the copy with a lot of ads. We have great illustrators who do, you know, these illustrations that accompany the story. So we had a real clear idea going into it, what we wanted it to look like, and how we wanted the paper to feel even, you know, and
sure.
it's just, they've just done a fantastic job of making that come to life.
Well, anything you want to, in my opinion, my limited opinion, my naive opinion, I would say that even introducing someone to, it's like for instance, National Geographic,
mm-hmm.
for a long time, people didn't really, as a population, our focus was television and stuff. And National Geographic did a really good job of providing these incredible images that kind of made you interested in a subject that you weren't necessarily super interested in, right? So
mm-hmm.
if you can capture them with an image and make it just this fascinating, beautiful thing, there's no way they're not going to at least want to read it and find out what's going on, right?
Yeah, I agree, especially coming from a newspaper background. You know, I think there is something really, really powerful, especially today, about a still image, because we're just battered by video constantly. Everything's moving. And I think if you've got a really powerful still image, it really does grab people and makes you want to, you know, look at that and read more about it. So I do think there's a great deal of power in the still image.
Yeah. Not to mention that old saying, right? Picture's worth a thousand
That's
words.
Right. That's right. But we're still writing the thousand words too. So you get it all.
That's awesome.
Well, I'm excited. I've been a huge fan of Fred's for a while. He's an interesting character. And I always get – my heart flutters when I see him. I'm kind of – speaking about being nervous this weekend, I'm glad he couldn't make it because no one can be mean like Fred Minnick can be mean. Sorry, that's the word I meant, was honest. Did I say mean? I meant honest. No one can be honest the way that Fred Minnick can be honest. And he sometimes surprises me. Like I watched the interview he did with Dave Pickerell.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying the new Spirit of Moth and Boss Hog, and their smiles on their faces. They're having a great conversation. They've obviously known each other for years. And then he asked him what he thinks of it. And he's like, no, I don't like it. I was like, oh my God. Like, it's so great to he's gotten to that point where he can be honest with no repercussion.
Fred's been through so much. I mean, knowing his history a little bit, my favorite picture of Fred is him riding in the back of that Humvee, taking pictures when everybody else is up there with their guns. He was in the military for a long time, but he's a real person, and he can just tell you because he doesn't care. I mean, it's like Fred's so passionate about what Fred's about. It's like he has an issue with something that
he'll tell you. Yeah.
He'll tell you.
And I think it's, I mean, I think that's really, really important. I think it's important to be transparent and to be honest. But the problem is from a brand's perspective, as you come up, let's say, especially nowadays, starting to do reporting or whatever the hell this is called, you brands are, can be, not always, but can be very sensitive to constructive feedback, even when it is constructive. So it's this dichotomy of like, you got to get to a point where you're undeniable. Fred's undeniable.
Yeah.
Meaning that even if you get mad at him, okay, that's on you. That's not like, if you're a brand and you don't like the fact that he just reviewed something with Caleb Kilburn, who love this.
Awesome.
I hate to say I love this kid. He was on the show. He was fantastic. Yeah. He's so charming. Yeah. He's that classic American cornbread boy, good old boy, you know, like he's just this perfect guy. He was reviewing something. Someone sent Fred a sample, and I forget, it's on YouTube. You can look it up. But Fred was cold. He was very honest.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, this is really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Just from this perspective, just giving the honest opinion. And we've been honest on the show a lot. There's been some things that I've kind of bit my tongue so I wasn't rude to someone that, you know, that I really liked, you know, but I'm getting there. It's a stepping process.
Well, you said Fred doesn't care. I think Fred does care. You know, I mean, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think,
let me rephrase that. Fred doesn't care about criticism to Fred.
He cares. Yeah. And I think, you know, we're approaching this as journalists too, you know, as opposed to, there are some bloggers who are really our fanboys and that's how they're coming at it. And I think the brands, especially the big brands, respect that. You know, I review bourbons on my website too, and I remember when Angel's Envy's Cask Strength first came out, I just really didn't like it. I mean, and I, you know, they sent me a sample, and I was like, well, I just don't like this, and I said that, but I try to be constructive. You know, it's really easy to write a funny, witty, cutting review and be funny about it, but you know, I tried to say this is why I don't like it, but if you like this, you know, this particular style, you might like it. It's not for my palate, because that's the other thing about whiskey is, everybody's palate is different. So
I think there's a big difference between something being bad and something not being your taste.
Right.
There's been a lot of things that, I'll give you a great example. I don't know about you, but I know three of us here are definitely fans of M.B. Rowland. Mm-hmm. And M.B. Rowland is not your typical Kentucky profile.
Correct.
We had a great time. Mm-hmm. We actually thoroughly enjoyed it. And I understand that not everything is going to be for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who won't drink any scotch. I'm like, no, there's a lot of great scotch out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I like to – it bothers me when someone hates something and says it's bad versus it's not my taste. There is some stuff that is just bad, right? You can't – there's undeniable bad stuff out there that everyone thinks is bad, Bit and Tucker. And but there's other stuff that's just not your bag, and that's okay. When I talk to someone that I know drinks 100% bourbon and they only drink Buffalo Trace products, I'm like, well, here's this Renegade barrel from Plantation or from Maison Ferrand, and they're like, I don't like it. Well, okay, it's fine. You don't like it. I get it. You're not that guy. But if I meet someone like Randy who drinks Armagnac, he drinks Lafroy, he drinks sherried scotches, bourbons, young bourbons, old bourbons. I know that we disagreed on the thing I said I hated from Kentucky that I said was hot garbage. what's it called? It was 2 years.
Oh, the Dueling Grounds.
The Dueling Grounds. I didn't like the Dueling Grounds I tried by a fire, but I was being honest.
Right.
And but I was also 2 cigars into that night.
Yeah. Right.
And he was like, your palate's probably blown out. And I said, all right, I'll try it.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating discussion regardless.
And I think if you hate something, if you can say, I hate this because, you know, you're doing some of these distillers a favor, frankly, because, you know, they're putting, especially these emerging craft distillers, they're putting tons of money into this product. A lot of them are releasing stuff that is too young. It just is. It's just not very good. It needs to age longer. And I know they need to make money, but somebody might buy that one bottle. They're never going to buy it again. So they're really, you know, Garrison. They're shooting them. Yeah.
A lot of people were mad at Garrison early on. Mm-hmm. Try them now.
Right.
The stuff they're putting out now is some of the best stuff
they
make.
But a lot of people won't ever do that. So, you know, I think, you know, if you try it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's okay. You know, you're not doing them any favors.
I think it's a little bit different. And I think what it is it's all about perspective. There's products on the market today that you and I aren't necessarily fans of. I'm going to use a general one, just not calling anybody out, but White Dog. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, sure.
There's a reason that White Dog's still on the market. People buy it.
Yeah.
Just because we're enthusiasts and we think one direction doesn't mean there's not a market for what they're trying to release. It's just caught in the wrong direction, if you will.
Sure.
So what's happened is this two-year product somehow has made its way up to the pinnacle of the bourbon culture. And it's being destroyed by the guys that are up there that are used to drinking 15 and 20-year-old whiskey.
What two-year-old product?
Whatever two-year-old.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. In general. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's what it is.
A good two-year-old product.
Yeah, it's just a disconnect. Mm-hmm. So that product's in the wrong person's hands. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that there's not a place for that product.
We can be specific. I'll give you an example. So for those who are watching, the episode that aired today is Basil Hayden's mm-hmm. or Kathleen DiBenedetto. Mm-hmm. Basil Hayden's is the entry door to bourbon, whereas we're all hanging out in the back patio. Mm-hmm. Like we're through the 80 proof stuff. We're now on, you know, we hit the 90 proof stuff, hunted, bonded. I mean, now we're looking at old stuff. Then you actually peel back from old stuff, right? You don't give a crap about the 18-year-old, 20-year-old bourbons anymore. And you're back to that sweet spot of 8 to 10, right? Or 8 to 12. We're just at a different point in our journey. And I totally agree with you. I don't think Basil Hayden's is bad. It's not my go-to because I like my mouth to burn a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the 80 proof is appealing to a different audience.
It's iced tea.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is I had a few recently that were of whiskeys that were 90 proof. And it's almost like you can literally taste the water more. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like,
what you're noticing is it's thinner.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too. But in my head, when I'm drinking Russell's, I know 3 or 4 pours, I'm going to be feeling pretty comfortable. Mm-hmm. But with that stuff, you kind of don't notice how much you've consumed because it's so thin. And so not just Basil Hayden's, but any 80 proof, you're like, you almost don't notice, okay, I'm not pouring 1 ounce or half ounce pour. I mean, even this, that's what, you know, that's a good pour if you mm-hmm. want to taste something.
Right.
And then you get a little, a rocks glass full of 80 proof stuff. And you're like, oh crap, I've had a lot more than I thought I was supposed to have. It's a bit misleading is what I'm trying to say.
It's sneaky.
Yeah. Of course, on the other end of the spectrum, a lot of people are into, you know, barrel strength bourbon, which is fine with me since my book is called Barrel Strength Bourbon. But if they get confused and buy the book instead, that's great. You know?
Just for the record, I haven't mentioned anything about you yet because I'm doing the intro. Okay. I don't want you to think I'm lacking. And she's like, I'm going to plug myself.
I'm going to plug my book. No, but you know, a lot of people are you know, drinking those. And with those really high proof bourbons, you know, you can have bourbons that aren't maybe as good secate by because that high proof covers up a lot of things.
Oh, 100% you know? Agree.
Yeah. So
I still contend, and I've said this for a few years now, and I know I have a habit of I'll say something, especially online, and I mean what I mean in my head, but don't realize how it might be perceived what I'm saying online. It might be read a different way. So I've had to often go back and reshape what I'm trying to say. So I'll even in person, I'll say, let me say it and let me shape it. Like, let me.
Right.
So I've always said, contended that the best bourbon, the best way I should have it is at straight from the barrel. And then I can add water as I wanted. But I want the most pure product to start with and then let it be my decision.
Right.
But it didn't always get said that way. Originally, I was like, I'd much rather have the straight from the barrel, whether it's hazmat or whatever, not necessarily that the most highest proof is the best. That's not what I'm saying, but I'd much rather start with that product and go from there. Honestly, mm-hmm. I've had a ton of hazmat stuff that was perfect as is mm-hmm. and some that was better at 120.
Right.
Yeah.
All of our Copper and Kings barrels, we were at 128, 130. We cut them all down to 123, just enough mm-hmm. to take that bite, like youthful bite off of that sharpness off the end, you know?
Yeah. That leads us right into what we're doing.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, I mean, at Rising Tide, that's what we focus on. So we're focusing on the barrel to bottle process. That's what we do. So when you tweak a product like that with just a touch of water, it rounds it out, makes it perfect. Filtration does the same thing. There's a bunch of different things that go into that, and that's what we focus on.
So are you guys in the position right now that you're actually I mean, worded this way, but you're going to start off as a bottling company?
Rectifier?
Okay.
Rectification?
Yeah.
We'll be sourcing. I mean, right up front.
Okay, yeah. So that's what you're saying. So you're going to be more like the Van Winkles were in the 70s,
correct.
80s. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll be more working on the back end of the product. So the products that we work with, not so much the 30% on the flavor in the front, but the majority of flavor on the back from the barrel.
Sure.
When you deal with filtration and you deal with proofing and you deal with blending, that's all palate work. That's where we're coming in.
Sure. So what's when can we expect something from you guys?
Yeah. Hopefully by the end of the year.
You're going to do a Mic Drop 4 Redux edition just like a playoff just to shut them down?
No.
You should do a series of insulting releases where they're slight.
Where's the edit button?
you should do a series like a 3-bottle release where it's a reference to something in the bourbon world.
Yeah.
You know.
Stickers.
Just stickers or lamps or. Yeah. Do a release called Throwing Shade.
That's a good idea. Shade.
And then on the, and you know, and
have a folding lampshade attached to the side of the bottle.
Just like you can have an iceberg on the front and color it gold.
Yeah.
A little Goldberg.
Man.
A little Goldberg.
Yeah. After you finish it, you can make a lamp out of it, wire it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a little lamp reference right out of the bat. Put an ascot on a bottle. I think we talked about that. Yeah.
Fragile. That's right. Yeah.
No, so, you know, our market, there's, like I was telling you before, there's butts for every seat. I really believe that, the old car saying.
Say that again?
There's a butt for every seat.
Oh, a butt for every seat. Yeah,
it's an old car saying, old car sales saying, you know. And there's so many different products out there that the only thing I can tell you is you have to really blaze your own path as to what you like, and it's going to change a lot. It's going to change a lot over your duration of a bourbon drinker. We saw a natural cycle of a bourbon drinker at Cork, and we were able to identify it. You could always tell exactly where somebody was in their bourbon cycle by the bottle they pulled off the shelf.
Oh, absolutely. You could tell a lot about people by what they choose to drink.
Right.
I mean, there's a difference. It could be a little bit misleading depending on how far they are into their drinking process. I mean, I remember there's a beautiful Scotch, Glenrothes 18, that was released a few years ago in 1995 was the year that it was distilled. So 18 years after that, it came out. And so 2015, 2016, it came out. It was the one that was like basically green baked apples. It was fantastic. But it was 95 and it was 18. It was 80 proof. And Gene, I remember... 2 years into his bourbon thing, he was at that level where everything he wanted was barrel proof.
Mm-hmm.
He went to a bar, tried this 80 proof release and dogged on it, hated it. 2 years after that, he's now at the point of his journey where he's enjoying lower proof stuff again. He enjoys the 85, 86 proof, 90 proof. And he writes a post about how great this bottle is, forgetting he had trashed it 2 years earlier. I screenshot it. I was like, it's the same bottle, brother. Like, it's just this example. So early in their, if someone says they've been drinking 3 years, what they grab off the shelf, I'll agree with you.
Right.
Someone that's been drinking 15 years, it's hard to tell a lot about them by the only bottle they grabbed, the first bottle they grabbed.
Sometimes that's true. But what we noticed at Cork was it was pretty predictable. You could tell how long a person had been drinking based on the products that they were picking. And it was pretty predictable in the questions they would ask you when you would come in. It would help me steer them in the right direction when they asked me for recommendations. I think that's kind of what we're looking at here as an industry too, to a degree, as an industry we're all evolving and our tastes are even changing. I mean, the longest time, the dusty whiskeys were the big draw.
You know what sucks about that is I'm seeing them less and less on the boards.
Yeah.
I mean, we went through this resurgence of basically burning through our oil reserves, and now people are drinking them. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're opening them up. It's no longer a trophy.
The prices are going up, and they're getting a little harder to find. You want some of this?
No, I'm just saying, we got them on the table because we're drinking them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Two of these. This is an 89 Old Taylor, ND, and...
There's the turkey again.
Mm-hmm. That's a turkey, 89. Let me try that Russell's pick.
The Russell's is really good.
Yeah, it's a tasty one. Jamie killed it on that one.
So are you a comic book fan at all? From I know that's a weird question to ask, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Yeah.
So there's something that happened in DC Comics early on where they would – Carla Carlton is a perfect DC comic name.
Yes, it is.
Lana Lang, Lois Lane, Lex Luthor, Clark Kent. I mean, there was a lot of like double letter, although Clark Kent's not the CK, but
yeah.
Lois Lane, Lana Lang. I mean, all of them had that double letter thing. Mm-hmm. Carla Carlton's is Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I was a reporter. Yeah.
Oh, dang. She's like, hand me that bottle. Yeah. Oh, this smells fantastic. God, I forgot how good. I haven't had Russell's in a while.
So good.
It kind of smells like old turkey. It's
one of the best.
Yeah.
I definitely miss.
It's very smooth.
Definitely miss climbing around there with Eddie. That's for sure.
So are you gonna go back and do it?
Charity stuff.
I mean, I'm sure there's still stores that'll take your stuff if you got your name attached to it. So you don't.
So.
You know. I mean. Well. I mean. Couldn't you still? Could I ask you an honest question? And if it's bad, we'll cut it out.
Yeah.
Okay. You leave Cork and Bottle on good terms?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so you can do a pick.
No, I left them better than I found them by a long way.
Sure, I agree. I agree. But
no, I mean, like,
hear that in your face? No, I'm just kidding.
No, like, literally, I got them at the airport storefront on my way out the door. I mean, it's, yeah, I hooked them up.
So you could still, if you wanted to, do another. I know Turkey's getting weird about their picks lately because of Campari, but.
I do mostly, if I do picks anymore, and I do a couple here and there, it's all 100% charity barrels. That's all they're for. I don't want to make a distillery nervous with me going around, climbing around in the rick houses.
What do you mean?
Well, they know what I'm doing.
Oh, because you're now technically in the competitor realm.
It's funny how that all works, and it's really an interesting thing because I noticed it when I went from barrel picker to blender, and now I'm noticing it again from blender and barrel picker to producer. Everybody's opinion of you.
They're a bit more skeptical
about some things. Yeah, amazing. It really is. But how they treat you changes too. So I don't want to put them in an awkward position. I absolutely love Campari. I love Turkey. I love those people down there. They do amazing stuff. Eddie's one of my favorite people and been a mentor for a long time of what I do.
Sure.
And I wish them nothing but the best, but I definitely don't want to make them uncomfortable going down there and picking either.
Yeah. So. You know, it's weird how that happens because I've had a similar experience with doing a show as well as doing a festival with other people who already have festivals. And I have nothing but positive things to say about Kenny Coleman and Ryan. But even in some of our conversations, I'm like, I don't think anything but like I'm the little guy. Right. I love everybody. But some conversations feel a bit like they don't trust me.
Of course.
Right. You know what I mean? Like you have that weird.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Dynamic when even when your intentions can be pure and honest. And we had the idea over a year ago to start doing we've got some pretty good relationship with Texas distributors. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do our own product, our own HBS branded bottle. Like it would have our name on it. We wouldn't make any money. I wouldn't make any money on it, but it'd be fun to do. And this is before I knew that they had those intentions.
There's a bourbon. I went to interview.
Very happy with that.
I went to interview Harlan Wheatley once at Buffalo Trace, and I had just started writing about bourbon. And he goes, "Wait a second, I want you to taste something." So I'm like, "Oh dear God!" You know, here's this master distiller, and he's like, "I want to see what you think of this." And it's like, so he brings me this sample, and I taste it, and I was like, kind of tastes like peanut butter, chocolate. It kind of tastes like a Reese cup. And he's like, "I love that. That's perfect." And I'm like, "What is it?" And he's like, "I can't tell you." So it was some, you know, they're always experimenting. So it's some experiment. So every time I see him, I'm like, "What happened to that?" And he hasn't released it yet, but they promised that when they release it, they're going to let me know. But
That's awesome.
But I was just like, talk about being put on the spot. You know, I'm like, what if I say the wrong thing? But
yeah.
Peanut butter bourbon.
There's three that we want to do. I want to do a coffee one, a specific coffee one. A peanut butter one, and we've accomplished a third, a coconut.
That is so good.
It's fun. I'd love to scale it up a little bit bigger, but we wanted to test the waters because if we screwed this up, it would be a complete waste of money.
You might stick with Southern Star on all these.
I think Southern Star hit this out of the goddamn park. Yeah.
That's really great.
So I don't think you can say goddamn on the radio if you want to mark that down.
Yeah, that's really, really tasty.
The thing is, the one thing I want to avoid from some other brands, and I love Prairie. I'm not dogging on them, but sometimes some of their beers become really thick and syrupy and kind of soy saucy in notes. I wanted to avoid that and get kind of a crisp barrel-aged stout. And we used Wild Turkey barrel, a Knob Creek barrel, and a 1792 barrel, and I think it just,
That is very
crisp. Three-barrel run.
Which is their minimum for their system. They can't do anything less than three barrels. So. Yeah.
Once we ran into that, another place they had a five-barrel system, same system.
Yeah, and I think what we'll do, we canned or kegged approximately 1,300 beers, 16-ounce beers.
They come in 12 packs, right?
12 packs. Yeah. But they're not, they don't have rings on them or anything. They're in a 12-pack case. You can grab one or not. I think what we'll do is I'd like to see 5,000 and get it in Dallas and Austin. And, you know, it just, that's cool, man. Just a Facebook group.
It's really neat how it all evolves. And you and I talked about this about a year and a half ago.
I've talked to you about a lot of stuff. You've been a little bit of a mentor about a few things I've asked you about. I'd love, listen, get the Blom Brothers to freaking respond to my emails.
I'll get new Riff
to come down here because I've been trying to get new Riff for over a year. The problem is they don't have stock.
Yeah, they're you're on their spectrum. I've talked to Jay and Molly already for you.
Well, Molly spells her name the same way as my wife. So I'm like, oh, I got it in, right? Yeah. I could just, you know, I love their product. I think it would be great in Texas. But the moment it hits Texas, we're going to clean them out.
Yeah.
Which makes me super proud because it's a, I've heard people, they don't like it. I'm like, what do you mean you don't like it? It's fantastic.
Oh, man.
It's exciting how our industry is evolving. I mean, it's not like we're getting worse over time. Right?
No. No.
Heck, I'm a new Riff Ranger. I joined up, so I got to go bottle my...
Can you talk about the beer and since the HBS name is on it, is Southern Star, are we doing charity work with it or anything like that?
So not yet. So we wanted to test the waters here. And honestly, for a beer, for a limited edition beer, it's about the max price you could be. It's $10 a 16-ounce can, which is quite pricey for – but their Black Crack is what they release every year. And they didn't charge us anything extra.
11%. That's a fair price.
Yeah, 11%, 16 ounces.
Party in the can.
Party in the can. And if it goes well, we do have – you want more? We do have intentions of expanding on that and doing more because now that the group has got the influence behind it, we want to do more charity barrels. We want to do – you know, I mean, we got to
– You're doing good.
We got to –
Keep it up.
We'll see how it goes.
Really tasty. No, I'm glad to see HBS come as far as they have, obviously.
Well, you've been around since you've seen a lot of its development, I'll say that. Yeah. Yep. You've also seen some of the shit shows that happened.
when we first met him, he was in Texas. I don't know if you remember that, but he was living in the Valley at the time.
When was this?
That was 2012, 2013.
Oh, but that was before 14. That was before I knew any of y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know you were down here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was Texas.
So you've seen then versus now quite a bit.
Yeah.
One more of that beer.
Yeah.
Man, that's changed quite a bit in the can.
It's going to. That's the neat thing about them.
Not even close.
It was sweeter a week ago. Yeah.
I like that the coconut is coming out so heavy. Mm-hmm. So it warms up that coconut.
I was kind of regretting it at first. I thought they went a little heavy on the coconut. And now I think it's perfect.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah,
so,
home run.
Carla.
Yes.
Is there something you don't like? And for, in terms of like, are you a bourbon only? I mean, you're the bourbon babe. That's your nom de guerre.
That's the persona. That's my persona.
Yeah, your
persona. Is there something I don't like to drink?
Yeah. Are you bourbon only? Do you prefer, you like scotch? I've got a couple scotches. And have you tried the Armagnac yet?
I need to get more into scotch. I don't like peat. It tastes like Band-Aids to me. I'm one of those people.
But I like it.
I can't do it.
There's a lot of things that taste bad, but if you approach it with the right mindset, knowing that there's none of that in there, like there's no Band-Aids in there for sure.
Right.
So knowing that it's more like, it's kind of like the Jelly Bellies.
You gotta expect it.
Right.
Yeah. You get the Jelly Bellies that taste like butter popcorn. It tastes just like butter popcorn, but there's no butter popcorn in there.
Right. I get it.
So it's offensive, but it's not disgusting. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm trying to expand, you know, my range on whiskey. I have a funny story. When I first started writing about whiskey again, I went to Whiskey Fest in Chicago.
That's
and
a
you
big
guys
one.
Know Whiskey Fest. Yeah. It's like 300 whiskeys. And I paid extra to go to the VIP.
You know,
it's
crazy,
hour.
By the way. We have more than theirs. Mm-hmm.
That is crazy.
And they do more people than ours.
Oh, yeah.
And they charge more than us.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, it's Texas crazy. Isn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
400.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting on – so we update the – sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
I'll say this.
I'm writing this down so I can remember.
We update our list as we get them from the vendors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple major vendors back out last minute because of turnover. A big problem you have with these events is someone gets hired or fired or quits.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, we have one vendor who paid – the guy quit his job. They're just not coming. And they paid to be there. Like, okay.
Yeah.
See you next year.
We'll take your money.
Yeah. Well, you're not getting it back. it's already been spent. No, so it's and we've got 376 on the website right now. And we're still waiting on a handful of vendors to give me their pour list of what they expect.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm bringing a few things, knowing that you're coming. I wanted to make an impression on you guys. In the green room, we've got some 60s J.W. Dant. Ooh. We've got some old Shinley for the 30s that I'd like to burn through.
That sounds awesome.
We've got some things that I'm going to bring back cool. for us to kind of nice. Enjoy. If you need a break, you know, get yeah. Have you worked a lot of these events or just gone as guests?
I've gone as guests mostly, but.
So, it's a on your feet behind a yeah. table can be a bit yep. maddening. So I'm gonna loosen your lower awesome. Your blood pressure. Oh yeah, yeah, got plenty of black tot. Awesome. So if you're a rum drinker,
yes,
love yeah. Rum. So we've got some 70s black tot good. That's 49 years old.
Can't wait to try that.
I know yeah, that yeah, sounds great. Yeah,
and it's heavy and rich and thick. But right go ahead.
Okay, so my story was so I paid extra to be in the VIP hour, which is what you definitely want to do at Whiskey Fest because you can totally tell when they open the gates and all the riffraff comes in, you know, and they're just like I'm all the poor get drunk. People. Yeah, all the poor people that just want to get drunk and everybody just lines up for the pappy and that's all they do. But at this particular Whiskey Fest, I had tasted all the bourbons that were on offer, so I thought I need to expand my repertoire here, and so. Somebody had told me that Redbreast Irish whiskey was a good one to try, right?
It's fantastic.
So I go over to the Redbreast booth and there's a younger man and an older man sitting there. And, you know, I've got my glass, I've got my, you know, my ID thing. I obviously paid money to be here. And I said, you know, I'd like to try the Redbreast. And the young guy says, do you want the 12 year, the 15 year or the cask strength? And I said, well, I don't know. What would you recommend? And the old guy leaps into action and he says, well, if you're just starting out, I'd recommend the 12 year and then the 15 year and then maybe the cask strength.
And that's he all a but pretty decent Irish yeah, accent, by the way.
Yeah, that was impressive.
He all but patted me on the head.
When I do it, it sounds Mexican.
So I stood there for a minute and I put on the accent of my native people and I said, well, if it makes a difference, I'm from Kentucky and I like a high proof bourbon. And they both sat there and he said, in that case, you may proceed directly to the cask strength.
And so, the 12 is yes. great on its own. The 12 is fantastic.
Which I did. Yeah. It was good, you know, but you know, it's not bourbon. I mean, it was even sure. the cask strength was, you know,
a bit weaker. Yeah, on that, weaker, yeah. The but, used barrel thing is not, you know, I think we're in a bit of a privileged state that we get these super dark, fresh barrels every time.
That's right.
So it's weird to acclimate for some people to. A yes. used sherry barrel or used ex bourbon.
Although I have, you know,
so we have Red Spot at the Whiskey Social.
So no, Red Spot is not going to be there. But now that you're saying those words, I don't know who the supplier is. That's an interesting new development for me. See how young and
I tried it last night.
See how young and naive I am. I've got a bottle in the truck. I almost brought it up here, but I figured I expected that you were bringing some heat. So I've been a fan of Green Spot since before it wasn't available mm-hmm. here 4 years ago, and you couldn't get in the U.S. And right. me and my wife were in Scotland, and so we started another tradition where every St. Paddy's Day we opened the bottle we brought directly from Dublin. Before it was available in the U.S.
Nice.
And it that tastes nice. Different than what's available here in the U.S.
Yeah. Sure.
Green Spot used to be in a green bottle
yep.
years ago. At that time, you could not get it in the United States. And mm-hmm. I found out about it from a bar in Los Angeles. And a friend of a friend recommended it. I had to find where to get it. So I found a place in New York City that would ship here. And I ended up buying it from them. Bought it for about 2 years.
I tell you what. Let's do this. I know people who are listening can't hear anything you're okay. saying. Bring your chair over here yeah. and put your mic between both of y'all. No. Put it right here, and then both of y'all share the mic.
All
right. So, and scoot down a little bit. So I got some barrel char on my beer, so, by the way. That's really exciting.
Green Spot. I think you're this legit. Was around – I think when I went to L.A. was around 2010. When
can
I
you hear him, Josh?
Yeah. I discovered Green Spot in a – it was in a bar, and my wife's friend introduced me to it. I never had it before. I hadn't even heard of it. After I tried it, I had to seek it out, right?
Find that's how
stuff.
I felt.
So I went online, started looking around, found out they don't import it to the United States. The only ones that come over are hand-carried. Some stores have it. So I finally found a place in New York City that would sell it and ship it to us. So we were able to get a few bottles. Within a few years, or I say 1 year, they started shipping it to me by the case. Then by the three cases, and I, you know, we were hooking up friends as gifts and things like that, and then they started importing it the year after that, and the price basically went in half when they started doing that. And so, you know, you compare these current Green Spots to the ones that were back then; they were definitely different back then, back in the 2012 timeframe, 2011. And so the story was they had four spots. They had the originally the green spot. They had the blue spot, which was a 10-year.
Never had that. The yellow spot.
It doesn't exist. So, yeah, the yellow spot's 12-year, and then you have the red spot, which is 15. So there's rumors that after this red spot has been released, they may eventually bring the blue spot back.
They should do a black spot and make it peated.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, it's kind of cool to see this history being restored.
There's a few. Connemara is a peated Irish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's pretty bizarre.
So I think these date back to the 50s. All these spots date back to the 50s, and they discontinued them sometime, I think, around the 70s or 80s, early 80s. And it's kind of cool seeing this progression where they're bringing them back to the market because there's this heritage of the spot whiskeys from way back.
And, sure. And they were the little guy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, kind of some cool history there and how the United States finally discovered green spot and brought it in. Mm-hmm. At the time I was buying it back then, I think only about 100 cases a year were making it into the United States.
Yeah, they weren't doing much.
And I think I brought in 3 or 4 cases that first year. So, you know, do the math.
Well, anyway. Stick around. Don't leave. Yeah, that's awesome. Scoot down a little bit more. No. Yeah, grab your glass. If I had realized we can just share, like, do a thing that between that wouldn't be.
I wasn't intending on getting on camera.
No, yeah. It's fine. You know, I've been wanting to have you on anyways because you're one of the only other NASA people I know that haven't been on the show. Mike Salopek, Pasha, and Steve Platts have been on. Randy works for NASA. Awesome. He's part of the capsule parachute assembly.
That's old.
But that's what you work on.
I was working on that for 2 years. We tested the Orion parachutes in the desert, did drop tests out of a C-17 airplane.
Very cool.
And did the qualification test and to man-rate those parachutes. So.
Can you see him on camera good, or is his back turned to us completely?
He's moving a little bit, but he's okay.
Yeah. Make sure people can see that beautiful face.
Got my good side. So, so that was quite the adventure, and I'd worked exercise equipment for Space Station for 17 years before that. And I work for the contractor. I don't work for NASA directly, but they are my customer, you know. So.
Sure.
Finished up that, went over to the parachute testing for 2 years. When that ended, I was looking for a new opportunity, and along comes the new spacesuit. So now I'm working on the new spacesuit. They call it the XEMU Exploration, EMU. The current spacesuits have been around probably since the early 80s. You know, I'm ballparking it. And so that technology is dated quite a bit. They still work great, but we need something new when we start going to the Mars.
Can you make more for women?
I heard they canceled that. Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute. I heard they canceled the walk because the suits didn't fit women.
They didn't have enough
I don't work that current system, so I have no idea. But I'm kind of the new kid on the block, and I'm over the requirements. We're making sure that all the requirements are met on this new suit, and that's kind of my job on that. And it's exciting, man. You know, being there almost 20 years, you see a lot of ebb and flow.
Especially with government funding.
government funding. You have different missions come up. And so it's been quite the ride seeing how the mission of NASA has changed over the years and how there's a new excitement about our exploration program. And, you know, just this past week, the vice president has issued, okay, let's go to the moon by 2025, I think he said. And so that's exciting.
Why is he wanting to go back to the moon by 20? Can you guys do it tomorrow?
I don't know what drove it. You know, I can't really speak to why.
Because we didn't go the first time is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I've seen modules from there. I'm like, there's no way this thing made it through space.
I've touched the moon rocks, so hopefully they're real moon rocks. but yeah, it's exciting, especially for the people working out there, to see that there's a focused mission to get us back out into that exploration realm. And you know, we're bringing new rockets online within the next few years that are going to be able to get us there. And just having a part of that, like especially the parachute system, they always call that the most dangerous, I think it's the most dangerous 3 or 4 minutes of the whole mission is the return right there when you're coming through the atmosphere. So to have making a hand sure the, testing those and
the
making
parachutes
sure,
work.
Yeah. I mean, we tested them in all kinds of parameters to make sure they work.
And how so fast do they get on entry?
I can't remember.
Some crazy speed.
Yeah, they're not supersonic when they enter the atmosphere, but it's pretty fast. I mean, yeah, it's fast. And so you have to test the system, make sure it can withstand all those forces that are at play there. But to have it, you know, just to know every time I see on TV, see this capsule come into the atmosphere and see those parachutes pop, it's going to be cool knowing that.
That you still get to keep your job.
And you can buy more bourbon.
Yeah.
We were just testers. That's
all. Yeah, and I've talked about that on this show too. The most fascinating individual, you know, this hobby requires a bit of liquid income, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going
to
get into this.
So
I've found the most, no pun intended. the most interesting people in this hobby. NASA people who work at NASA, you know, authors, I mean, news reporters. I mean, there's the most coming together. I mean, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Four Roses Master Sailor Brent Elliott. He's a chemical engineer. Like his background has nothing to do with whiskey. I mean, Marion Barnes, same thing.
Brett Connors, who works for Marianne as a microbiologist, PhD.
I met someone the other day that I've been talking to for years and didn't know what he did. Aaron Silver, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Aaron Silver, I was on my way up to Dallas to go visit Iron Root, which we got to get to this. I haven't tasted it sober. I mean, I haven't tasted it without a cigar in my mouth. Aaron, I show up to his house. He's living very comfortably. I'm like, what do you do, man? Like, I've talked to you for years. I didn't know anything about you. And he kind of stumbled his way into medical billing, but from the psychologist side, people who go visit, you know, therapists and stuff. And it's all the interesting stories under where you got where you are today sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like you meet 20 new people. Bart Bogus has one of the most incredible low-key collections in the entire state of Texas that no one publicly knows about now. he's sitting on 2,000-3,000 bottles, cases of like crazy stuff. But he's quiet about it, and he's got an interesting backstory having to do with insuring 18-wheelers. Like, how do you – there's this Michael Canfield. He's an energy broker. I might be – he doesn't watch this, but I might be butchering what Michael's job is. But it's something to do with energy credits, you know. And if you've been to his house, it's pretty comfortable. And it's just fascinating that who you run into and get to know and meet. And I would have never met – someone from NASA if it wasn't for this hobby.
So I always say our hobby, yes, it's about the whiskey. We enjoy this whiskey. It is.
It's an equalizer.
It brings people
together that have no reason to talk to each other otherwise.
and you have this starting point. You venture into it as a hobby. Before you know it, you start meeting people in the industry. And I mean, not everybody does that. The serious collectors, I think, do know people in the industry. But what I've always told people, they say, why do you enjoy this so much? It's not the whiskey. It's the people we meet.
Oh, it's 100% the people
Absolutely.
We meet.
That's why we enjoy it so much is you get to meet so many diverse people from all over the country. I tell Ed all the time with the groups online, not just the Houston group. There's national groups out there as well. There's probably not a city in this country that he or I could go to or you. You know people in every single city or within 40 miles.
Every time I post, I'm going somewhere.
You know,
I'm like, I'm going to Seattle. Like, hey, hit me up when you get in town. Let's go have lunch.
And
like,
you talk to people that aren't in this bourbon world or this bourbon culture, and it blows
their
mind.
You've also never met them in person. There's a lot you've never met in person.
Right. Yep.
And all of a sudden, your best friends having lunch together, and it's not weird.
Tell me how awkward that first conversation is when you first meet somebody you've been talking to forever and online. And
you're like, are you?
There is a brief moment, but you know what fixes that is one drink. Yeah. One drink. It's like, man, you remember that thing that happened in PCS the other day.
Ed and I talked online for probably four or five years before we finally met in person. And, it's not just somebody in that town. It's people that would let you stay with them if you needed to. Never even met them. It's like, I'll come over.
The first time you met him, was this last year?
No, before
that.
Yeah.
A great example is Randall Kirsch.
Yeah, Randy Kirsch.
You hand out to California, I got a place for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Got all the booze you can drink and a place to stay and all the best food in the world.
Some of the most incredible patio settings you've ever seen.
With a really nice climate,
I met a woman like that.
Yeah, super great
last
climate.
Weekend at the New Orleans Festival, you know, I finished a session and this woman came up and she's like, when you go to St. Louis, blah, 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 and you can stay at my house. And I'm like, okay, awesome.
I'm going to hit you up on that.
Yeah. Like, don't tell me that if you don't mean it, don't say that.
You know, to bring that around full circle, it's about the people and it's about we all share this common thing and everybody, you know, of course, there's the arguments online from time to time.
But
in general.
Even me and Ed have had a couple of questionable.
Everybody shares something and it makes everybody kind of get along and you can talk shop with them. And
I'll be honest with you, most people I've met
and learn
who, even if they're difficult online, are not the same in person.
Absolutely.
100%.
There's a recent tiff I had that you're aware of that he's great in person, not so much online. Yeah. Wade is often divisive, great in person, can be difficult at times online.
He's abrasive, but he's calculated abrasive. Yeah. He's an amazing person.
There's very few times I've actually seen some of these people actually get angry. It's more about their approach and not so much about their temper. But the environment here has been so incredible. I mean, there's been some that I've even though you said that first meeting, not always. Sometimes it's like we've been friends for years. We've never met in person, but all of a sudden I know who you are. We've been talking online. It's a unifier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, between Facebook and listen, Facebook was garbage 3 years ago. I don't know how long the secondary market's been around, and I don't know how long. I don't know how long that's been happening on Facebook, but I will say that 4 years ago, when my Facebook feed was all politics, I thought about giving up Facebook. Mm-hmm. And now 99% of my feed is bourbon groups and posts. And I could, if it doesn't apply to me, I just keep scrolling.
The illegal secondary market.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't talk about Fight Club.
I don't know anything about that. Yeah.
Let's open the other beer. I want more of that beer.
But you know, the other thing that you know, it's about drinking the bourbon too. Sure. I mean, that's what it's for. It's a very social
thing. It's not about collecting the Pokemon vacation of
I mean,
beer.
That's what I don't get is the people on Facebook who are like, here's whiskey. My collection, and they're all none of them are open. You know, I mean, I'd have a modest collection because I drink it. I mean, I might put aside a bottle and say, oh, I'm going to save this for my anniversary this year or something like that. But, you know, I don't get the hoarders, you know, who never open the stuff.
I let me defend them for a second, because a lot of people, going back to liquid income, some people can't afford to buy more than a bottle at a time, sometimes a case at a time of something or a mix of something, and they don't drink as fast as they purchase. So it's not intentionally hoarding. I have
some people buy it though that don't even drink it.
Agreed.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. But I'm going to defer to the positive glass half full mentality.
Okay.
That there are a lot of people, including myself. I built some shelving in the garage to hold my collection because my wife wouldn't let me keep putting it on every available shelf in the living room. Right.
So we're running into that problem.
Yeah. Yep. So we have bookshelves that four of those shelves on both bookshelves are whiskey.
Oh, yeah. All our
I built shelving in the garage, and now I had to build a second set of shelving. And so I'm sitting on about 600 bottles and I drink all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm intentionally doing that.
Right.
You know, it's just you accrue faster. And like for the event this year, we part of our problem in Texas is our laws are kind of garbage. Mm-hmm. So we give away for every VIP, paid VIP ticket holder. If you paid to be a VIP, we give you a bottle that we paid for out of our profit to prove to the brand that – because you can't sell at the event technically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Technically, you can't say, here's my money. Let me take a bottle home. You can't do that here. I don't know how it is in Kentucky, but I know you can buy at bars, which is awesome.
If they have the right license.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Right. So in Texas, what we do is we want to prove to the brands that we are making an impact, that you're not just paying to be there. So we're giving away 600 bottles this year.
Well, that's great.
And that's for 600 paid VIP ticket holders. But what happens is some people get a few drinks in them, ready to go get some food or ready to go leave, whatever. So we get left with a couple cases, sometimes a couple more. So then I've got to add an immediate 50 bottles to my collection.
I have to.
Oh,
the burden you bear.
I know. Yeah. That is terrible.
I'm just saying I'm not hoarding. I'm not hoarding. Doing my part. Yeah.
Can I speak to the hoarding a little bit? Because I was there at one point. I was like, we got to get this stuff because it's no longer
Some of them
available.
Were an investment for...
Well, no, not really. I mean, it was stuff I like to drink. Store picks. So I'm going to go with the store picks. So years ago, we used to think these store picks weren't going to be around forever. Mm-hmm. So you would buy a case at a
and
time.
Pulling back four roses.
Well, okay, but okay. So let me go on to this. You were buying a case at a time because this may not be around next year. Well, then as you get through 2, 3, 4 years down the road, okay, there's still Four Roses picks. There's still Knob Creek. There's still, you know, whatever.
Well, OWAs. Than we hoped, but they're definitely there.
They're still around. And so they didn't stop. And so at some point you have to say, okay, they're going to be around. I'm going to drink what I have and just buy them as they come up. You know, and so that way you don't end up with 600 or 700 bottles. You might keep, you know, some people might want 20. Some people might want 100, 150. But you don't have to keep this huge collection anymore because these store picks are becoming a thing. They're popular now, whereas back in the day they were very exclusive and only in these pick groups and things. Now they're open to the public.
Well, this is some of the best goddamn wild turkey I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, I know I have a friend who has one of those, what are they called, Pelican cases that you use, fireproof cases. Oh, he's got some of his
that's
whiskey.
That's an exorbitant price that holds like four bottles.
Yeah.
That's a travel case?
Yeah. And he said, okay, he plays this game. He's like, if there's a fire, your house is on fire, you've got not your kids, your spouse, your pets, your pictures, what whiskey do you run back in to save?
Right.
And I was like, I don't even get that. Like, first of all, it's going to explode. You know, I'm not going to run
my laptop, my jewelry.
He was so disappointed in me, but I was just like, there's nothing I can think of that I would run back and save in a fire. I don't think of my,
So funny story. Hurricane Harvey's rolling in, right? I'm at the Mayweather fight. I'm across town. I'm not in my house. And we didn't realize that this huge storm was going to come
here?
In.
Wasn't here.
What's that?
The Mayweather fight?
No, we were watching. I'm sorry.
You were watching the Mayweather fight.
I was at a buddy's house.
That was my birthday. And I kept telling people that the rain wasn't going to be as bad as people thought they were.
So I'm 10 miles from home.
It'll clear off.
We didn't realize what was going on outside.
Yeah,
and it dumped 20 inches of rain in 4 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. So the streets were flooded. We tried to leave. We couldn't get out. So the first thing I called my wife, I'm like, get my Booker's rye off the floor. That was the very first thing I told her. I was like, if it starts coming in the house, grab my Booker's rye and get it upstairs.
Yeah.
Because, I had some whiskey on the floor in my closet. And
my Laphroaig shelf is on the bottom shelf.
Yeah.
So it's only two inches off the floor.
It wasn't the first thing I thought of, but
you're
it was one of them.
You're reconsidering this now, aren't you?
Because, that's valuable stuff, and it's stuff I wanted to drink. So anyway,
yeah,
funny story.
So you strike me as someone that is very female conscious. There's been I'm asking you this. What is your biggest – because I ran into an issue. I had Elise Blackman on the show. McAllen sponsors the show. Mm-hmm. Big fan. Elise Blackman is the I think her title just changed, but she's like the South Texas regional. She went on a show called Scotch Test Dummies, and she spoke on McAllen. She is probably the most passionate, most well-spoken. I mean, she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I adore her. But the comments of this YouTube video were brutal. Just a bunch of old, fat, white guys. Mm-hmm. Not just white. I shouldn't say that. But just old, curmudgeon-y, jerky guys talking about how she talked too fast and that you can tell it's not her passion. What's the biggest – because what happens is these events will hire what they call pour girls, right? Mm-hmm. So you go to a festival. There's actually marketing agencies that hire beautiful women to pour that don't necessarily know a lot about what they're pouring.
Mm-hmm.
So they're appealing to this audience of men, but also there are some women who actually do this because they're well-spoken, well-knowledgeable. I mean, you've mm-hmm. done this for years and you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest frustrations you've seen? Do you see it more in the bourbon world or is it just in general?
Well, I think in Kentucky we're seeing it less, but you still see it. I mean, it's still – when I first, bourbon has always been my drink since college. I mean, I Maker's Mark, and Coke at a party, and it's like, this is my drink. I never liked the white spirits. I've always liked bourbon. But, I got used to going up and ordering, I'd like a bourbon neat. Are you sure that's what you want? Yeah, I'm sure. That's why I ordered it, I can't tell you the number of times my husband and I would go out. He would order a glass of wine. I would order a bourbon. The server would come back.
Yeah.
They'd give him the bourbon and me the wine. I'm like, no,
I'm a big fan of pina coladas. And when my wife goes out, she'll order a whiskey. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
I drink whiskey at home all the time. Mm-hmm. Let me have a pina colada.
Right.
Can I get a copy
of that,
please? I love
if you like pina coladas,
cruise ships are your bag.
Yeah,
I've never been. Oh, I've never been. I want to go.
See, we're stereotyping you right now.
Yeah, well, you should.
But yeah, I think it is annoying when brands hire those poor girls. I mean, it's annoying.
It's defeating.
It is defeating. It's defeating to women. I mean, but I've also experienced gotten pours from guys who don't know what they're talking about. So I mean, it's not just
honestly
women.
That's more offensive to me.
Yeah, is it?
Which might be my own
why
prejudice speaking out. But
because men instinctively know more about
No. What I'm saying is there's and I can understand how you're going that way.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see a man at a booth that took the effort to buy a kilt and to really put on there's actually a well-known brand rep. I won't say his name to out him. I like the brand, but he was an actor before this and his Scottish accent is complete bullshit and fake.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll go to these events dressed in a kilt and he's got a Scottish accent and
it's insulting.
It's insulting, right?
Right.
So it's not that he's male that pisses me off.
Right.
But when you try to exude this image of manliness and you're trying to pitch the idea of manliness, and let's be honest, whiskey is largely advertised to manly men. You don't drink your whiskey and eat? Oh, well, then you're a girl, right? Yeah. So it's this weird thing that happens.
Well,
so I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There's an evolution going on up in northern Kentucky to where that's not really the case. And what I've noticed is that the cocktails are starting to dominate in the whiskey world.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The competitions for the cocktails are unbelievable up there. And
we have Molly Wellman writing for Bourbon Plus, who's awesome.
And you know, she's a personal friend. I absolutely love Molly.
Yeah, she's great.
And she just went like Bartender of the World.
Bartender of the World, something. Yeah. Wow. So she's great.
So that whole element of it doesn't necessarily have to be neat anymore is now changing in northern Kentucky to where they're drinking it however you want it.
Well, in fact, I mean, the very first line of Mad Men, the series, was Don Draper saying, "Can I get another one of these in Old Fashioned?" You know, and that was part of what sort of brought the cocktail culture back.
Oh, they definitely contributed to drinking culture.
Although he was probably drinking, you know, Seagram's or something.
You go to any bar, any whiskey bar around town, and I would say it's half women now around Houston. I think the bourbon experience, not only are guys bringing their wives into it, and maybe they were there all along. My wife's a prime example. Her dad drank bourbon. She's always been a bourbon fan, and that is one thing that enables me to have the collection I have is because she partakes in the hobby with me. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy it, you know, and my, you know, my son is learning about bourbon. He's a young guy, right? But he's excited about it. He looks forward to the day where he can sit down and have a pour with me.
Yeah. I think, and, I'm a member of the Bourbon Women Association, which was formed in Louisville in 2011. It's a networking group for women.
You guys have an event every year too,
right? Yes, we have a symposium where women come from all over the country and to the home place of bourbon. But, you know, I think that formed largely because our founder, Peggy Noe Stevens, who was the first female master taster and worked for Brown-Forman and in hospitality, when she would lead events, men would ask questions. The women would hold back and not ask as many questions until after the event. Then they would come up and they would ask really intelligent questions. They just didn't want to ask them in front of everybody.
Agreed.
And so she thought maybe we need an atmosphere where women feel more comfortable about asking questions. Now, I don't feel intimidated about asking anything anywhere, but, you know, I think women have always been drinking bourbon. Mm-hmm. But the industry really has not marketed to women, and they don't know how to market to women. They're getting better at that, but I think.
Well, and they we're running out of time, but, I think they're doing it wrong initially, like with the Lady Walker.
Oh, yeah.
And they started doing a couple. There was a couple. There was a Lady Walker and one other one.
Mia Kunis.
Well, actually, Mia Kunis is a whiskey drinker. Yeah. I liked the fact that she was the rep for
Well, Woodford Reserve had a really off-putting commercial that they ran during Mad Men where it was like the voiceover was, you know, I want a man who can build me a shelf and let me use the hammer and not care that I don't know how to use it. And I was just like, what is this? This is horrible. You know, it was awful. So one thing that our group does is provide information to the industry, because when we've done blind tastings, by far, you know, the women prefer the high proof, you know, whiskey.
Sure.
I mean, that, you know, we don't want little pink drinks with umbrellas in them, you know.
My wife's got a way better palate than I do. I had a couple of broken nose incidents many years ago. And my wife, I think that I have a very, I can appreciate many spirits. Mm-hmm. But I think my wife is really honed in. And I think a study came out not too long ago saying that women have better palates than men in general. It's just this – the frustration exists, and I defend it at least completely, because this guy was a complete jerk about – he's like, you can tell she doesn't care about – what. No, she absolutely comes across as someone who loves whiskey. And I'm always just curious about a female's perspective on that whole thing, because it's something that I think we are moving away from. We're moving away from less snobbery, but diverse palates.
I think we're to the point, too, where we can stop saying female master distiller. I mean, you know, they're master distillers. Right. You know, Marianne Eaves is a master distiller. You know, it was novel, but, you know, we've got several of them now. You know, we don't need to single them out. They're master distillers.
I agree with you completely. Listen, we burned through all four segments pretty fast, and we're actually way over. So thank you guys so much for coming on the show, Carla.
Yes,
it was very nice meeting you. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Yep.
And if you need a pour at all for what's going to happen to you tomorrow, it's going to be brutal. We're expecting close to 1,300 people.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a beast. That's so awesome. And I'm super excited about hanging out with you, man.
That is great.
I'm going to be running around like a chicken with my head cut off the next 5 hours, but – at some point, I want to sit down with you and have a drink.
Definitely.
It'd be a complete crime if you left without us sitting down together.
We'll definitely have a party.
When are you flying out?
Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll find time. Yeah. I think I'm physically recuperating Sunday, but I can find time Sunday evening or something.
Come over Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't been to your house yet. And Don's across the street or next door?
Yeah,
sweet. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Thank you. One last one.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you.
Absolutely.